Hi, everyone. This is Martin Willis with Podcast UFO. We have episode number 9 today. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/podcastUFO. You can listen to us on your smartphone on Stitcher. We have a free app on our website. Today's guest is John Kelly, Vancouver UFO examiner. He's a fascinating guest, and it's a great show, and I hope you enjoy it. Hi, everyone. We have John Kelly, Vancouver UFO examiner, on Skype. How you doing, John?
Doing great, Martin. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And you're in Vancouver. And one of the subjects we had talked about is possibly talking about UFOs in Canada and specifically on the West Coast. And I'm fascinated by this. And it seems like you hear quite a bit about UFOs in Canada.
Well, you know, we have a very curious population. People are interested in this subject, and you know, we're spread out on over a huge landmass. We're the second largest country by landmass alone. So we have lots of opportunities for people to have encounters, not only in nature, but in the cities. And again, lots of people are interested in these topics. They're interested in, they speculate, you know, what the potential significance is. Canada certainly can be a great place for these kinds of encounters.
Yes. I have a friend that lives in Ontario, and I was talking to him, and I finally brought up the fact that I have a site on UFOs, and he didn't say anything for a while, and I thought, well, you think I'm nuts, right? You know, because that's generally what a lot of people say. And he said, no. He says, actually, he said, I was at a party in 1978, and we all stopped and watched this. We heard fighter jets coming with their afterburners on, and they were all chasing a disc, he said, and we watched it go across one way and around and back. And he said, and everyone looked in the papers the next day, and there was nothing about it, but nobody ever talked about it.
Yeah, well, there certainly is a stigma. Public opinion has been formed in such a way that witnesses who come forward with claims about encounters with UFOs are looked upon with derision. But there can be no doubt that evidence continues to mount up throughout the world. And with instrumental evidence, we're no longer in the realm of speculation about the role of the imagination of the witness or their state of mind. Cameras aren't susceptible to emotions, moods, and other mental types of influences. They simply document what's there. And the evidence continues to pile up. So I'm not surprised in a way when people say that, you know, the more people I talk to about this subject, the more I find out that people around me have had experience with it.
Right.
But we're still, you know, collectively, we're still coming to a point where we're finding a comfort zone in the face of, you know, an onslaught of Hollywood films that continues to portray the subject as a versus type of a scenario, aliens versus humans.
Right.
This kind of, you know, predator type of archetype is not helping. We, you know, at a grassroots level, the citizens can say, you know, we want to pursue this in a sentient way, you know, to develop our intelligence, develop our education around this topic, to learn how to better interact with the world. Obviously, to those of us who have been part of these experiences over many years, the UFO is part of the world that we live in. How can we better understand the subject and learn to harmonize and live in a way that will help us to accelerate in knowledge and as well to leverage the potential that these, ostensibly energy and advanced civilization technologies represent?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You sort of touched on something just a second ago, and I'd like to ask your opinion. Do you think that the encounters are benevolent?
Well, you know, this question is something that people discuss in the UFO community quite often. I don't like to make broad generalizations. You know, my understanding of the nature of the world is that there's night and there's day, there's good and there's bad. It's the way the world is. And so having an expectation that there's any type of experience that's infinitely fantastic is kind of naive in my opinion. There's ups and downs in any area, including UFO contact. I mean, my studies have shown that people claim to have experienced contact that involved abductions, those people were actually terrified, and it did give them emotional problems for decades after the incidents. So people do have difficulty with these encounters. They're not, it's not all easy. It's not all fun and games. There's great potential represented by the nature of these contacts, but to anticipate that everything is going to be a walk down the garden path is naive and unrealistic. Nothing in this world is like that. Everything has its ups and downs, good and bad, strengths and weaknesses. Some people, to sort of step beyond questions, will identify that the extraterrestrials are living some kind of perfect life. If only I was an extraterrestrial, all my worldly problems would disappear. But even the extraterrestrials have to die. They don't live forever. Yeah. They have to deal with death, mm-hmm. and we have to deal with death. So it comes down to, what it all seems to come down to then is how do we manage, how do we live in honor and dignity, side by side in a harmonious way to achieve the maximum growth and potential in our lifetimes. This seems to be the question. Whether you're an ET or a human, we all have to face these basic essential questions. There's no escaping it. So I don't take one side or the other. I honor and respect the positions of those who've had difficulty through encounters with these phenomena, but I also learn from those who bring messages of hope and higher potential through these encounters as well.
Very good. That's really a lot of really good points there. Can we talk a little bit about what is going on these days in the UFOs with all the new technology out there, video cameras and cell cameras and all that?
Yeah, there's a lot of different information coming forward on a fairly frequent basis, and a couple of different ways people can find out more on the internet. One very popular online publication, of course, is UFO Digest, and they have a Canadian portal as well, ufodigest.ca, which focuses on stories coming out of Canada, and the publication team there gets a lot of materials, not only from myself from the West Coast, but materials from Ontario, Manitoba. Ontario, of course, is a huge population center, so the number of potential witnesses, of course, is great, and many, many interesting stories come from that region. I've interviewed people from that area who are party to those incidents and in touch with the witnesses. As well, of course, in British Columbia, where I'm located, we have some level of organization. There's a society, a nonprofit society called UFO BC, which primarily serves as a collection basket for public witness testimonies. They collect testimonies and publish them on a website and through newsletters. And they've been around for I think several decades, but many years. And they have quite a log of information. UFOBC's website at ufobc.org, of course, is a site to visit for that. I write a column called the Vancouver UFO Examiner for examiner.com, with concentrations on experiences and events in Vancouver and the southwestern British Columbia region. But because of my connections, I also have materials that come in from the Pacific Northwest, Washington State, as well as my connections in the southern U.S. and Texas and elsewhere. So I'm in touch with some of the leading researchers in Pennsylvania, people producing video on a regular basis. Allison Cruz comes to mind as someone who produced a plethora of video images shot in third-generation night vision and high-definition professional camera systems from her location in Pennsylvania. She's probably, if you think about videographers in this field, she's one of the people I think about who's really on the front lines of a grassroots initiative to invest in decent photographic equipment and to release publication directly to the public, not to archive the materials away, make them inaccessible, but to push this out into the public forum. John Leonard Walson is also a very well-known videographer in this niche. He's based out of England in the UK, which, of course, has a strong connection with Canada and Canadian history. But his use of HD camera mounted in a proprietary telescope system that he devised has produced very exciting images that show stationary objects on the edge of the atmosphere that at first appear to be like satellites or even stars or planets, but through the telescope show exceptional detail. really one of the most exciting videographers, again, out there, John Leonard Walson. Both he and Alison Cruz's material can be seen on YouTube on a regular basis. I've interviewed Alison Cruz for the Vancouver UFO Examiner. John Leonard Walson is more inaccessible to the media, but he publishes on a regular basis. And so if you're looking at, you want to look at the bleeding edge, not only of do-it-yourself camera rigs that people are devising, you know, on a home budget, but also the exciting materials that they've been able to document and that they're sharing openly with the public. I think of those two people the most. Now, here in British Columbia, we certainly have no shortage of people with cameras and excitement for these type of topics. You know, we're on the far west coast of the continent. And there is a lot of legacy here in Vancouver and in the region mm-hmm. for all kinds of really interesting phenomena, which include Sasquatch, UFO, other kinds of spiritual phenomena, lots of mysteries here, lots of it. We're on the edge of all kinds of wilderness in huge territory with sparse mm-hmm. population. So where I'm in the city of Vancouver, I can see the mountains on our north shore, but just on the other side of the mountains, that's all bear country, cougar country. You know, you've got your bald eagle, all the wildlife you can imagine is rich here, and including all the mystery and mystical phenomena that comes with nature in the wilderness, including the UFOs, the Sasquatch. It's all local here in the region. A woman named Dorothy Isett became very well known through the 1970s and 1980s through the publication of her 8mm film collection. She recorded over 30,000 feet of 8mm UFOs, 8mm film of UFOs, from her back deck in Richmond, which is one of the part of the Greater Vancouver area, the city of Richmond. Just fascinating. She would just go on her back deck, and she would start rolling, and the UFOs would appear, and she would get the captures. She made all kinds of television appearances over the decades and released a book in the last 5 years or so, I believe, along with a DVD. Dorothy Isett is the person there. I-Z-A-T-T is the spelling of that name. Someone to look out for, someone who has a strong legacy here in the Vancouver area, produced lots of documentation, had university professors examining her and her footage, and they all found it very convincing. Certainly a great inspiration. When people see your average citizen homemaker participating in these cosmic events, it makes us feel that we, in spite of whatever our limitations might be, as the average person, we also can be party and participant and engage in phenomena that really transcend the limits of mainstream human knowledge and understanding. I mean, maybe sequestered somewhere in some black budget, top secret file, there's all this information that, and secret research that the public may never see. But right. the average citizen, in truth, has as much or more potential access as the high priest of science. You don't need to be... You don't need to be, as my colleague James Gillen says, a rocket scientist to participate. We have inborn potential for these things. We just need to exercise it, our curiosity, a little bit of inspiration, a little imagination, a little bit of study can go a long ways. You know, when I was growing up here in Vancouver, I took liberal advantage of the local community libraries, which stocked plenty of books on the paranormal and UFOs. I learned about Dr. Jael and Hynek when I was 8 years old. Really? So
I was going to ask you what started your interest in this. And it was you started reading at a very young age?
Yeah, I think as a young reader, when I was an early reader, this topic area in general, the intellectual subjects that were beyond the curriculum of the universities, these were the subjects that captured my attention, and Drager and all of these authors whose books came out from the 1960s, 1970s, I read through many of them with great interest, and it fueled my imagination tremendously, of course. So as a young reader, I was exposed to some good authors and those publications, and it gave me a foothold on these borderline areas of scientific research that had appealed to highly intellectual people who were these authors and researchers, and they were sharing, and it felt to me that this was something that would be of long-term interest for me. As it turned out, I was living in a city that had a legacy for these phenomena, and eventually I was able to become an active participant as a witness and taping them as well.
Oh, really? So you did some taping?
I've done quite a bit of taping. Yeah, I have in my catalog, I must have 12 to 15 hours of just UFOs.
Wow.
Then I'm the witness and the videographer in those, and then I have my colleagues and their collections. So, Les Mirza is a very prominent local videographer whose ongoing encounters he's documented those in HD from his back deck in the center of the city in the area near the City Hall, Vancouver City Hall. Where there is a well-known 1937 photograph, a black and white, that was captured by a photographer in that decade.
Did you say 1937?
1937.
Wow.
There was a photograph that was taken that shows an artifact on the exposure that resembles your spaceship-type UFO flying over City Hall. And as it turns out, the City Hall neighborhood called Mount Pleasant is like a corridor for UFOs. And on more than one occasion, I've been on Les Mirza's deck in that neighborhood, taping alongside him. We had one incident that was 40 minutes in duration where a cluster of UFOs flew, changed direction, changed colors, appeared and disappeared. And we caught it on two cameras. So in total, we have 70 minutes of documentation of one incident just from one afternoon.
Wow.
That's how much data we can collect if we, you know, pursue this with interest. It's absolutely accessible, and anyone who knows me personally knows all about my pitfalls and shortcomings. And yet, you know, the average person with a little bit of initiative like me can be a participant. I think that's pretty fascinating. I think it's inspiring. There's lots of local community interest that's expressed through the formation of different groups, such as the UFO Meetup Group in Vancouver. The Vancouver UFO Meetup Group has regular meetings and people sharing their testimonies and insights into these UFOs and related phenomena. As I said, UFO BC had been an instrument for a long time, you know, providing a public face and to these issues. And I don't see it's not a topic that's going away. Vancouver has a long-standing reputation as an extremely liberal-leaning culture here. So the people who come here, you know, that they're interested in this topic, you know, as a form of artistic inspiration, philosophical inspiration, scientific inspiration, it fuels their imaginations, and we have more than our share of incidents. As I said, it's just amazing how often contact, you know, type incidents, close encounter incidents, so to speak, even, you know, of the first kind, are taking place here in the city. It's we suffer, of course. Vancouver suffers from terrible weather, like any rainforest. So we have a lot of gray. We don't have a lot of blue sky days throughout the year, but definitely on those clear days, everyone is outside. We're enthusiastic, you know. It's like living in Sweden here. I mean, we have a lot of dark times during the winter. I'm sure Maine winters are also quite severe.
Yes. I was in Vancouver two years ago for a couple of days and didn't see the sun. That's for sure. Yeah, go ahead.
It can be hard on the mind, but what I'm saying is that on those clear days, everyone who can gets outside and we live in a city, you know, where nature is part of the city planning. We have a substantial parkland within the city itself, and I think that the preservation of what is available, we don't have like a lot of heavy industry here, for example. So the preservation of the natural setting helps in facilitating these types of contact incidents. British Columbia has been marketed for decades as supernatural British Columbia. I don't have any idea what they mean when they say that, but I can actually say that's quite ironic. I have a lot of ideas about what it means. I've been living here for a long time, and I've had a lot of experiences here. It's a great place for this.
Mm-hmm. What would you speculate the reason would be why certain areas of a country or a region has more sightings than other places?
Well, sightings are the human side of the phenomena. So in order to have a sighting, you need a witness. So in areas with large populations, the potential number of witnesses, of course, increases, whereas sparsely populated areas, less potential witnesses, less sightings.
Mm-hmm.
But our perception of phenomena doesn't necessarily indicate whether it exists or not. In a related topic area, a new species of shrimp was just discovered in a cave in New Mexico. Shrimp have been there in New Mexico. It was just in the news this week. A new species was just discovered. Well, the species didn't appear just like manifest last week. They've been there for millions of years probably, mm-hmm. and we as humans are just catching up. So the observation of scientifically valid phenomena is a human experience and requires a human observer. But the existence of the phenomena isn't dependent on the presence or availability of observers. It exists irrespective of whether we know about it or not, whether we choose to be ignorant about it or not. So the UFO phenomena in general, what I say with regards to these concentrations of sightings and potentially the indication that the phenomena are concentrated geographically there, in general, I say, well, they live here. You know, I don't speculate that spaceships are commuting 80 million light years back and forth to their star systems every day to get here so we can see them. I don't think that's really makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot more sense to me that they're present in the environment and that we encounter them frequently or infrequently as circumstances allow, just as people will have encounters with wild animals like deer or cougars that come onto their property or bears or wolves. You don't see them every day. But we will have encounters with the beings that live in nature. It does happen. So I speculate that they actually reside in these areas. As to their facilities or other use or acquisition of resources, et cetera, those are mysteries to me. I don't have every answer, but it just seems to me that the ability to on short notice show up for the camera on a frequent basis, for example, it's ridiculous to think about how if we compare that to Hollywood special effects, the multi-million dollar budgets we would have to have to pay to have this kind of equipment flying around on demand to show up when the cameras just happen to be rolling. Mm-hmm. I mean, that the odds of that are just insane. We're getting the equivalent of multi-million dollar special effects on civilian budgets. The only way that could be possibly happening is if they're frequently in the area. And so when I say UFO corridor, I think that the avenue along which we are able to detect the UFO's passage over the center of Vancouver, over near City Hall, is possibly some kind of ancient pathway that they had been following long before the European people arrived, and are henceforth, they are known to the First Nations who are here. The Native American people in the region know of these phenomena and have talks about their position on these phenomena. It's not unknown to them at all. What one comment I'd like to state related to this question is how the perception of what we see here in Vancouver, some of these phenomena are not unrelated visually to what are called Ebony in Mexico. Mexico City, a well-known UFO hotspot since the times of the 1990 or 91 eclipse.
Right, yeah.
Lots of UFO materials come from Mexico on a frequent basis, and many of them show these luminous balls of light, morphing balls of light, color change, this kind of thing in daylight. And this is related to what we see here. So although, for example, Les Mers' catalog shows some objects that look like solid and metallic bodies like spheres or disks, the majority of the phenomena, they're luminous bodies and they morph. And so it leads to speculation about how in ancient times, when there was a continuous forest all the way from Mexico all the way up to northern British Columbia, mm-hmm. which would have served as a pathway for wild animals like bears and cougars, wolves, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Well, the UFOs, it would seem, would be using these natural pathways as well for their own purposes. As to what those are, I can't elaborate, but this is what I speculate. You know, in general, as someone who's been around paranormal photography, has produced a lot of very intensive paranormal photography over years, I think about the subjects of the photographs. What appears are the subjects that our ancient ancestors were having their own perceptions of as well. They didn't have camera systems. They may have recorded this through artwork or storytelling in Stone Age societies. But I feel strongly that we're, in a way, particularly in our Western materialist, Descartes, Descartes-oriented type approach, where man over nature type of philosophy is the basis of our industrial society. We're actually rediscovering and reconnecting with our ancient legacy, rather than this isn't something that was invented in the last 50 years. The UFO, it has more to do with a reconnection to states of knowing and understanding about the nature of the world that we live in, and humanity's place in the world, that was understood by our ancient ancestors. Because again, it seems to me, or it's my sense of these things when they happen as a witness, and we've produced a lot of photography and video, is that we're really just reconnecting with the experiences of our ancient ancestors. Our ancient ancestors also encountered such phenomena, and they spoke of it in terms that may, that may or may not be cryptic. People speculate a lot about Ezekiel in the Bible and his wheel within a wheel. There was a fellow who worked at NASA who wrote books on how, as an engineer, he could interpret the wheel within a wheel as a nuts and bolts spacecraft. I mean, that was his perception of it. So people, when we re-examine the experience of our ancient ancestors as simple people who didn't have a lot of agendas, or a lot of they weren't married to a lot of dogmas necessarily, academic dogmas that may limit people's willingness to invest in research that it may be considered too controversial or politically incorrect, even though it has scientific merit. These kinds of pressures didn't exist in simpler societies, and the people were more free to explore and experience. So we're re-encountering, as Westerners, people from the West, Western society, Western education system, we're re-encountering the experience of the ancestors, and we need to evaluate our current standards and values in light of these findings and discoveries, which are inevitable. The more people get in touch with the harmony of nature and learning to understand how the world works outside of the cities, outside of the high-tech environment, outside of capitalism and Wall Street and big governments, all these things, the more people learn about this, it's inevitable that they're going to have breakthrough experiences. My philosophy, because I have a long background in yoga and meditation, says that it's inevitable that all people will have contact with cosmic phenomena, from the human to the cosmic. I see a direct path between the two. I don't see that it's necessary to have a huge technical infrastructure to make that happen. It's wonderful to have instruments like space telescopes and exploratory probes that go around the solar system, to image planets close up. It's fascinating. I love it. But the human mind is this powerful instrument that supersedes all of this material technology by far. And this brings us into a very interesting topic of UFO research that I like to focus on. And I think that Vancouver witnesses are a good model for this topic, which has to do with the psychic dimensions of contact that the witnesses report frequently, mm-hmm. which include contact-related dreams. And so it seems that due to the frequency of this, of reports of psychic interactions, including lucid dreaming, out-of-body experiences, on behalf of the witnesses who are producing substantial catalogs of visual materials, using instruments, this is just speculation, hypothesis, or imagination. They produce a lot of instrumental evidence. And in tandem with the production of that evidence, they have claims, consistent claims about dreams about contact and psychic impressions of contact, such impressions that even instruct them on the days where there will be abundant visual material and that they should have their cameras ready. They send me emails and they say, last night I had this wild dream about all this stuff flying over the deck, so I decided to set up my cameras today, and by 5 o'clock this afternoon I just had the most amazing experience and I caught the whole thing on tape, and I have this record, that would stand up in court. It's all time and date stamped when the witness is reporting their precognitive dream about contact, and then they're producing all this video. This is what's going on. Wow. You see, the economy of manifesting physical experiences, if we think about places that promise a lot of fantasy, like a Disney World, where you can have an amazing experience that you can't get in your backyard. Well, the investment in infrastructure and technology is huge. It costs a lot to create these amazing experiences for people. And I think the universe is probably the same. The frequency of physical contact, eyes on contact, or situation where we'd be able to get a recording on a camera are not as frequent as the psychic contact. The physical contact serves as a touchstone. You know, if you and I, Martin, we're in business together, and we held a meeting in Chicago where we both, you know, showed up at a conference and sat down at a table. We met eye to eye. You know, we'd establish a bond and a trust, and then we would go back to our respective coasts, and we could conduct business by telephone or internet. Mm-hmm. We see, you know, we don't need to be physically side by side every day to validate or to have effective contact. And in the same way, what happens in my experience and with the witnesses who have spoken with me, this is not every witness, but there are many of them, it's persistent that they talk about the psychic dimensions of contact, including dreams. In fact, UFOBC, in one of my summaries of their reporting from 2011, was a story I wrote about dreams of contact that were represented highlights of the witness reports on the UFOBC site. There were people talking about really intense dreams from my point of view, were significant or representative of consciousness, conscious pathways of consciousness between other intelligences and the witnesses that had been opened perhaps through an encounter incident. Mm-hmm. But the psychic link had remained. And so people have dreams of contact, visions about engaging in sightings. And it's this mental influence. This is something that doesn't require, once that communication pathway is working, just like an internet connection or a Skype hookup, you know, for audio, once it's functioning, then there can be a regular exchange or flow of impressions and ideas. And this is what happens. This is where it leads us to. In my investigation, not to diminish the significance of many other different kinds of encounters, but what I focus on and what my witnesses consistently are able to talk about is how a sighting leads on to inner dimensions of contact, and that becomes a very powerful influence and source of energy and inspiration and other things for those people. You've probably read about the investigations and the subjects who produced significant artworks or bodies of artworks as a consequence of their contact, or that their creative expressions were heavily influenced mm-hmm. by contact. Mm-hmm. And so this is aligned with what I'm describing, that very deep inner processes are stimulated in ways that are not well understood, but the signs of that influence are highly evident, either through emails that are time and date stamped describing precognitive dreams, or through artistic expressions such as paintings or sculptures that people will manifest, perhaps even expressing new talents that had not previously been expressed, that may have only been latent. They'll be stimulated through this kind of contact. Mm-hmm. And this is where I see it's going. As learners, as students of various subjects, we learn well in the company of others, particularly those who are more skilled or able in these subjects of interest. So the presence of someone who is strong in a subject area will have an influence that is really, you can't really put it into words, but it will influence the growth and development of the student. And mm-hmm. so we can speculate that higher intelligence who demonstrate their aptitude through the operations of vehicles that aren't consuming gasoline, that fly and appear and disappear and appear to have like dimension shifting capabilities and stuff that we don't have in our consumer technology world, we can assume that they are more intelligent or more capable than us. Their influence is stimulating our growth and development. There can be no doubt that we are becoming more intelligent through exposure to more intelligent entities than ourselves. And so I say it's this mental and psychic influence that is of great interest to me. I've someone who's worked as a clinician over a number of years, working in areas of subconscious communications, resolving repressed trauma, these kinds of topics. So I have an appreciation for the processes of growth and development in the psychological arena, and I say that this is a topic that's wide open for deeper studies and understanding the influence of the the presence of the UFOs and the consciousnesses behind them, their influence on the growth and development of human human mental and emotional potential. You know, our synaptic development, neural pathways are heavily influenced. One of the signs, you know, of the how the nervous system responds to the influence of the, of a UFO encounter is how nervous the camera operator becomes. Mm-hmm. And I can speak from firsthand experience is that having exceptional tremors during the recording period is normal. When you're especially if you're not really conditioned to it. I've had incidences where I was able to handle recording the shot for maybe 30 seconds or a minute, and then I couldn't keep the objects in the frame. I couldn't handle, my nervous system couldn't handle what was going on. And
I'm sure I'd be the same way. I mean,
but yeah. So this is a very interesting phenomena that you can measure when you're involved in something like this. My colleague James Gilland at Isetti Ranch has a lot to say about this because the number of witnesses and camera operators have been on his property, and what he likes to talk about is how folks, even from the television crews, these are hardened camera operators, will forget to turn on their cameras. Will stand with their jaws dropping and, you know, forget to record. All this will happen because the nervous system isn't ready. The synaptic development isn't there. The conditioning isn't there. And so our functionality, we're in a whole new area of functionality. It affects the growth and development of the nervous system, these encounters. There's just no doubt about it. And we can measure that by how fidgety and jittery we get when we're trying to make a recording.
Wow. You know, I have a friend in Oregon, on the Oregon coast, and she moved up there with her husband from California. And she told me about, I told her about this podcast, and she told me about some dreams she's having. And she thinks that she's being contacted through dreams. I should connect you two together to talk because she had quite a story, and that other people have shown up in this town that are having the same dream.
Wow.
And, it's right on the Oregon coast. So we'll talk off air on that, and I'll connect you two together if you'd like to talk to her.
So for the audience's sake, we can know how timely it was that I brought up this dimension of contact and how accessible for you, Martin, it is in that you have someone in your world who knows all about having dreams about contact.
Yeah. As soon as you mentioned it, I was like, I'll be darned, because I had never heard that before except for her talking about it.
Well,
and, you know, she's run into some scientists that actually have moved to her town, and they're having, you know, the dreams, which is, you know, these are highly respected scientists that are having the same dream.
Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a level that I have never, ever thought of at all, and I'm sure most people don't.
Well, no, and again, it's part of our conditioning in terms of our experience with the subject. The folks who engage in hypnotic regression, of course, are exploring unconscious dimensions of contact and the psychic impressions on the contactees. There's a lot of literature that's published about the results of regression sessions and what the witnesses said. We can go back to The Interrupted Journey, which is the book that was written about Betty and Barney Hill,
mm-hmm.
and the discussion about what emerged through the hypnotic regressions. But I think that, you know, at the end of the day, most of us, probably the majority of us, aren't left with nuts and bolts evidence of UFOs in hand that was given to us by someone who walked off a spacecraft to take to the White House or something like that. That's not what we're left with. We're left with an impression, and we're left with the influence. We may have a recording, we may not, but it's the legacy of these experiences remains. It impacts our psyche, and this is, you know. So when we ask ourselves, you know, what does it all mean? Why am I having dreams about such things? Why am I having such encounters and witnesses, you know, witnessing all this really far out stuff? Why is this happening? What am I supposed to do with this? Part of it is just this influence, the signature it leaves on our consciousness. Perhaps it prepares us for future events. Perhaps it prepares us for something else. It certainly is. But again, as I mentioned earlier, due to the obvious expression of jitters and other kinds of nervous phenomena that happen during the encounters, there's no doubt it's impacting our nervous system. So we have to reframe, from there. What we have to do as a human society is reframe our position in the world and in the universe. You know, we're not, Canada has a lot of large corporations, for example, that are involved in global resources like mining or gas and oil.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are making a lot of money cutting deals in Mongolia and other parts of the world to exploit resources from the earth. But this is just, you know, sort of the Descartes man over nature kind of philosophy that's supporting that. It's not the only way to be, you know. This isn't it's not the only way to live in the world. Yes, we need resources to do different things. We couldn't have an internet without some technology that turns sand into circuit boards. We couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But it's in the interest of, you know, leveraging our strengths, our technical strengths and our ambitions to propel everybody forwards, you know, to create a better world and to find a way that humans can live in harmony, to create harmony. You know, our Western society has a lot of defects, and we can read about them every day in the papers about the terrible things that go on. You know, people lose it, people go crazy, people act like they're insane, and they do terrible things, and it's in the paper every day. We have problems in our society that aren't solved just by, getting rich or, being a big shot in a fancy car or whatever it is, you know, being a Donald Trump or whatever it is, being the boss and firing people. That's not the end of the, you know, this isn't the be-all and end-all. We have, humanity has a long future ahead of us. We have, a super-duper destiny, and getting in touch with that and re-examining our position. People in the exopolitics community talk about how there are all these cosmic societies that have a political agenda and a defined hierarchy of organization of societies, of multi species type societies, speculatively or empirically, and that the Earth is like a quarantine zone because of our commitment to war and exploitation. We don't want to think necessarily about exporting that to other parts of the galaxy just yet.
I hope not.
You know, we want to bring all the best things about, you know, our wealth of culture and ideas and know-how and initiative, the things that make the world great that we have in us as well. We want to take that stuff, but we have to reframe, you know, what our society is about, what our commitment is to, you know. We have a war, de facto war-based economy that Canada is heavily married into. We're the source of most of the uranium that goes into the depleted uranium munitions. When we think about depleted uranium polluting widespread water resources on a global regional basis, well, my understanding from talking to UFO witnesses in areas like Stephenville and Marfa is that the UFOs, and this is in literature as well from many areas, is that the UFOs are use the water resources for different purposes. They need the water too. Hmm. So, you know, our nuclear industry that's creating like Fukushima scale catastrophes is polluting everything. The people, the other kinds of people who live here that we may or may not know very much about also have a stake in the sustainability of our planet. You know, a rapacious destructive approach that consumes everything and consolidates all the wealth into the hands of very, very few people, isn't going to produce an environment that's going to work for everybody. So we are challenged. In other words, I'm saying that the UFO challenges us on a scientific level, philosophical level, religious level, but it also challenges us on a political and social development level as well. Because at the end of the day, most of us aren't left with nuts and bolts, mini spacecraft, souvenirs from the aliens. Most of us don't get that. Yeah. What we are left with is the legacy is the signature it leaves on our minds. You know, to make us ask questions, to look beyond. Is there a better way? Is there a better way? You know, are these examples of beings who found a better way? Can we, as a human species, can we find a better way? And these are the questions that I think about.
That's great. That's great. Well, you've been an excellent guest. Where can someone find you? You gave out your website earlier.
My website, which is a hub for all of my different projects, is yourinnervoice.com, yourinnervoice.com. You can find me as the Vancouver UFO Examiner on examiner.com. I produce Secret Message TV for YouTube, and I have all kinds of projects. I'm an advisor for exouniversity.org. This year, you'll find me in all kinds of places. Trance Report with Dwana Paul is one of my productions. I'm in a lot of different places. I hope folks will look me up on Facebook or come to my website, send me some email, tell me your stories. And again, Martin, I do want to hear more from your folks in Oregon. It sounds fascinating what they're going through as well.
Yes. Great. So thank you so much. So this is Martin Willis with John Kelly, and that's it for today.